This is Ken McDermott-Rowe. Today we're going to talk about solar energy, specifically how you can use solar power to provide electricity and heat to your home. To help us understand solar power for the home, we're pleased to have as our special guest, Gordian Rocky. Mr. Rocky, who is trained as a civil engineer, has been a leader in energy policy issues in New York State for many years. From 1993, he served as executive director of the federal court-appointed Citizens Advisory Panel, a Long Island energy watchdog group representing the interest of Long Island's electric customers. He has participated in numerous proceedings before the New York State Public Service Commission, including the proceeding which led to the requirement that 25% of New York State's electricity come from renewable sources by 2013. Mr. Rocky is the founder and executive director of Renewable Energy Long Island, a membership-based, not-for-profit organization promoting clean, sustainable energy for Long Island. Thanks very much for being with us today, Gordian.
Well, thank you, Ken. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
Can we start out with a basic discussion of why people should be thinking of turning to renewable energy sources?
Well, there are many reasons, of course. For me, the most compelling reason is when I go out at night and I look up at the night sky and I see those beautiful stars out there and I imagine those many, many other planets out there, and then I look down and I realize that I'm standing on one of the most beautiful planets that I know, certainly, and I'm standing certainly on the only one where we can live. And for me, that is plenty of reason to make sure that we use energy in a very sustainable and responsible manner, and that we pass this place on to future generations in a way that's at least as good or better than we found it when we got here. So that is, I think, sort of the long view. Of course, there are many other good reasons why clean, renewable energy is a good idea. I think now more than ever we realize, certainly after September 11th, we realize the importance of having domestic sources of safe and clean and renewable energy. When you think about it, solar energy, wind energy, and really all renewable forms of energy are local forms of energy. People talk about, you know, shop local, grow local organic food. Well, the same applies to energy. Using renewable energy and energy efficiency is really the best way to protect us from this roller coaster ride of a volatile global oil and gas market. You know, we're all sick of seeing these prices go up and down, and it costs, you know, $60 to fill the tank of your gas guzzler. And it's tough on our pocketbooks, but we are so dependent on Middle Eastern oil and OPEC that, of course, it's no wonder that we're seeing these extreme price spikes. If we become more energy independent and use local domestic sources of energy, we're going to have to worry about that a lot less.
The electric energy that you're receiving from your utility company is coming from power plants that are usually using what kind of fuel?
You know, interestingly enough, in this country, in the United States, we still burn primarily the dirtiest of all fossil fuels, and that's coal. About half of our power, half of our electricity on a countrywide average comes from coal powered plants. Those are the worst in terms of greenhouse gas emissions causing global warming, and the worst in terms of air emissions causing all kinds of health and other environmental impacts. Here on Long Island, for example, we do not burn any coal. We have oil and gas fired power plants, but of course they also emit carbon dioxide, the chief greenhouse gas, and other air pollutants that are harmful to our health and our well-being. Generally, you know, renewable energy and sustainable energy practices do three things. They keep money in our local economy, creating jobs here rather than send our money overseas. Secondly, they protect our environment by reducing the emissions of toxic pollutants and climate-changing greenhouse gases. And thirdly, renewable energy is really the way this world is going to be powering itself. We just will not have enough fossil and nuclear resources available to meet the energy demands of the future economy. When you look at China and some of the other developing countries, you realize very quickly that they're going to get very soon to a level of comfort, to a level of air conditioning and driving in their own cars and SUVs, where there is just not going to be enough energy to go around. So there are three very good reasons to make the transition to clean renewable energy sources today. The first one being keep our money in the local economy, protect our national security, really. Keep the money here, use our own energy resources, and sun and wind are local domestic energy resources. The second is protect our environment. Do not put toxic emissions and carbon dioxide and greenhouse gases into the atmosphere, because it's going to kill us eventually. And as I said, the third is we will have to make better use of what we have, because otherwise this is not enough to go around.
Now, I'd like to talk to you today specifically about solar technology, but before we talk about the systems people might use in their homes, I think we should talk about conservation, because a kilowatt hour that you conserve is one you don't have to generate. What are the principal ways that homeowners could conserve energy?
It's really very simple, and in some cases it's so simple that people just forget about it. and I'll just take the example close to home, which is my own home, the house I built here on the east end of Long Island. I lived in a conventional, modern, two-bedroom home on the east end of Long Island a few years ago that had an average utility bill, an average energy bill overall. Back then I paid about $110 on my local bill and, you know, the typical fuel oil, heating costs, etc. I went out and built an energy-efficient home from the ground up. I'm a civil engineer by training. I figured, you know, that's the least I can do. Build a good, well-insulated and well-designed building, using sustainable building practices as much as possible, and using energy-efficient technologies throughout. When I was done with building that building, my energy cost had been reduced by about 70%, 70. So I reduced my local bill, just as an example, from about $110 to about $35 a month. That's not using solar panels or any other renewable energy resources. That was just putting in compact fluorescent light bulbs, using daylight, daylighting, you know, letting more daylight into the building, into the home, using energy-efficient refrigerator, energy-efficient dishwasher, and energy-efficient clothes washer, et cetera, et cetera. Simple stuff, in some cases as simple as caulking around a window or a door frame. In some cases, it doesn't even cost anything to do.
How about insulation?
And of course, putting in really good amount of insulation, making sure the house is very tight and doesn't let the warm air in the winter out, and doesn't let the warm air from the outside in the summer in. And, of course, you got to make sure you have adequate ventilation built into the house.
So most of our listeners are going to be working with their existing house. They won't have an opportunity to start from scratch, but there's still substantial savings to be found.
Absolutely. There are so many things that that everybody really can do at home and at their workplace. And to name just a few examples, I mean, if any of our listeners still has a conventional-looking, old-fashioned light bulb in one of their sockets, I call them dumb bulbs, because they really generate primarily heat and not light. When I switch on a light bulb, I want to get some light so that I can read or do whatever I got to do. I certainly don't want to heat up the place. Conventional light bulb, what's called an incandescent light bulb, turns about three-quarters of the electricity that it's using into heat, and about a quarter into light. And in the summer, when and if you have air conditioning, then that's really a dumb idea, because then not only are you wasting three quarters of your electricity on heating the place, but then you're running your air conditioning harder to remove that additional heat you've generated. So replace those light bulbs with compact fluorescent light bulbs, which have come down in price tremendously over the last few years and also have improved dramatically in light quality. One of those bulbs may cost a couple of dollars extra, but it'll save you anywhere from $50 to $75 per light bulb over the lifetime of that bulb. That's pretty that's a pretty good investment.
So you brought down your energy consumption by, you say, 70%?
Exactly.
So, but the typical person still could make, he might not make savings on that order, but maybe 10, 20, 30% if he starts replacing his major appliances with more energy efficient ones and gets new light bulbs and insulates and new windows and that sort of thing.
Absolutely. I mean, you start somewhere and you do one thing a week or two things a week and you get there eventually. And again, it doesn't have to be costly. You can do whatever your budget can carry. And I would not recommend to throw out all the appliances you have in your home and to replace them. Basically, what you want to do is replace them when they break, when it's time to replace your furnace or your boiler, your heater, your air conditioner, your refrigerator, what have you. That's when you want to go and shop for the most energy-efficient appliance you can get at that point. It'll cost you a couple of hundred dollars extra in some cases. But you make that money back in a short amount of time, in addition to getting the environmental benefit, of course. People have to realize that when we use electricity or any form of energy, there is more to it than just paying the price of energy. We pay a tremendous environmental price for emitting carbon dioxide and other toxins into the air.
Well, now that we've saved a fair amount of energy by conservation, let's talk about the systems, solar systems that we could put in our house. I'd like to talk about two separate systems. One, the solar electric, which we use to run our appliances and lights. And then secondly, solar thermal, which we'll use for domestic hot water and for space heating. First, let's talk about the solar electric system. How does a solar system work, basically?
Essentially, solar electric panels, or photovoltaic panels, as they're called, or sometimes you hear them called PV panels for photovoltaic, are solid-state units that convert sunlight into electricity. In a typical installation, you would have a number of solar panels installed on a rooftop, and they don't have to be installed on a rooftop. They can be installed on any more or less south-facing and unshaded surface. And as soon as the sun hits those panels will generate electricity, and that electricity will then be converted into just regular household electricity that will power your lighting, your appliance, your what have you in your home. You don't need any special appliances like, you know, 20, 30 years ago, people were off the grid and they had to have battery banks and special low-voltage appliances and all of that. All of that is sort of the solar system of your grandmother. Modern state-of-the-art systems today are installed, and you'll never even notice the difference in your home until that day when your utility bill comes in and you look at it and you're shocked and can't believe that that utility bill is so much lower or even almost zero compared to what you had before.
What's powering the solar cell is sunlight, not heat.
That's correct. It's, you know, anytime the solar cells receive light, and light, of course, is a form of energy, they convert that into electricity. And so, you know, I have solar panels now on my own home, and that has reduced my electric bill, which was about $35 a month after I made sure I practiced good conservation and installed energy efficiency measures. I reduced it to about $5 a month, which is just having the electric hookup and having the electric meter from the utility company still running. So yes, those panels will generate electricity during sunshine hours and also even generate some electricity when it's cloudy, a very small amount. But anytime they get light, just like a photo sensor, they will produce electricity.
So it'll do as well in Connecticut or in Long Island on a sunny day as it will in Arizona?
Down south, they get a little bit more sun than we do up here, but we have a pretty good amount of sunshine here in the northeast and particularly on Long Island in Connecticut. And I can tell you this, Ken, I'm originally from Germany, and I still keep in touch with folks over there. Germany has more solar panels than I think pretty much any country in the world. Per capita, there's a tremendous amount of installations over there, and as you know, Germany is a much more northern latitude than we are here. They have much fewer good sunny days there, and yet, you know, it's cost effective and it's doable over there. So if the Germans can do it, we can certainly do it here.
The orientation of the panel is important?
Absolutely. Good question. It doesn't work if you put the panels in the shade, and it doesn't work if you put the panels on the north side of the house, unless you happen to live in Australia, let's say. So in the northern hemisphere, they got to be facing more or less south. That means anywhere from, you know, southeast to southwest. You lose a little bit if they're facing, you know, off the due south axis, not a whole lot, but they should be more or less be facing, you know, from southeast to southwest. They should also be ideally tilted up somewhere between 30 and 41 degrees of the horizontal. That's typically your roof angle. If they don't, if you mount them on a flat roof, that's okay too. You're going to get a little bit less output, but still, it's going to work quite well. The main problem is if you install them in a place where you get shade during a part of the day, even partial shading. If you have a big tree that's shading your roof and you're going to install them on the roof, even partial shading will cut down tremendously the amount of electricity produced.
So shade is critical.
That's a critical issue.
How does the energy get from the cell to into your appliance? I understand there's a device called an inverter.
That's correct, Ken. The inverter simply converts the electricity that's coming from the panels into regular 110, you know, household electricity. That means you don't have to buy any special appliances, but it also regulates the flow of electricity between your panels and the utility grid. Because what's happening with these state-of-the-art grid-connected systems is that you will generate electricity when the sun is up, and you may be using that electricity in your home, or you may not. Let's say you're not home, nothing is running, sun is shining, and these panels are cranking out kilowatt hours like crazy. Well, this inverter, this little electronic box, is going to feed that electricity right into the utility grid, and your electric meter will actually spin backwards. And I tell you, from my own experience, it's a joy to watch that meter go the other way. When you're using more electricity than your solar panels are generating, or when you're not generating any electricity because it happens to be dark at night, you will be drawing that electricity that you're now using from the utility grid, and your meter will again run forward. And that inverter box will regulate that traffic going back and forth seamlessly without any interruptions. You will never see the lights flicker. You will never even notice on your computer or anywhere else in the house that your electricity is being switched over back and forth between your solar panels and the utility grid.
And totally New York seamless. State has a requirement that the utilities take back your excess energy.
That's correct. In my case, for example, with my panels in my house, I generate much more than I can use during the summer months. I get credit for that. So at the end of the summer, I typically have a few hundred kilowatt hours in my energy credit bank that appears on my utility bill, on my LIPA bill here. And then during the winter months, when there's less sunshine because the days are shorter, I can draw from that savings account and use those kilowatt hours that I've saved up, if you will, during the summer months, during those darker and shorter winter months.
So Connecticut also has a net metering law. I don't know if it's as generous as New York, but you could actually end up with a zero bill at the end of the year.
That's correct. The beauty of this concept, and it is called net metering, because you're going back and forth between your panels, your solar panels, and the utility grid, is that you do not need batteries to store the electricity that you generated. It used to be that you had to install, in addition to the solar panels, you also had to install a big bank of batteries. And while that's not a bad thing, if you want to have backup power when the power, utility grid power goes down, that may be a smart idea for those instances. But generally, batteries, of course, are maintenance intensive. You know that from your car battery. They're expensive. They need to be replaced from time to time. And so doing away with a battery bank, if you do not need backup power, is a great thing to do. So in my case, for example, I do not have batteries hooked up, and I just use the grid, the utility grid, to store the electricity that I generate when I have excess, and then I take it out of the grid when I need more than my solar panels are generating.
So you really don't want to be off the grid, even if you have a very good system.
That's right. Unless you live in a rural area where you just don't have utility power, and it would be extremely expensive to bring utility power down to where you are. Typically, now most systems installed are grid connected, and that also from a financial perspective makes sense, because if you're installing a solar electric system that is not grid connected, you are in most cases not eligible for the utility rebate and not eligible for certain tax credits.
How much in maintenance is involved with a solar electric system?
There's virtually no maintenance. The panels, as long as they're installed on an incline, on a typical roof surface, you know, a certain tilt, they will get dirty from time to time, of course. But in a good rain, that dirt will wash off. So there's really not much maintenance there. In a snowstorm, you know, they'll be covered in snow. But it's amazing to actually watch how very quickly that snow will melt and slide off the panels. So you don't have to climb up on the roof and, like, get the snow off. And again, keep in mind, with a grid-connected system, you'll always have power. You know, when your panels are covered by snow, and it might take a few hours before that snow slides off, you wouldn't even notice until you stepped out of the house to look at it, because inside the house, you'll be powering at that moment on utility power.
What's a typical lifespan of one of these systems?
Well, the solar panels typically have a warranty of 25 years, and they last much longer than that. The average or the expected lifetime of a panel is somewhere in the 35 to 40-year range. What they do is they go down in productivity a little bit over time. So you have a warranty for 25 years, and they'll be producing electricity much longer than that.
Well, now let's move on to the solar thermal system. Can you tell us how that works?
Well, a solar thermal system is a very effective and very cost-effective way to heat water for your home. And there are many other solar applications, by the way, solar space heating and other technologies. But let's just talk about how to make sure that you have solar hot water in a home. Essentially, it's a hybrid system where you are using the power of the sun to heat your water. And when there isn't enough sunshine, and that certainly happens at times, you will then use a conventional and most oftentimes existing water heating system in your home to heat up your water or bring it up to the required temperature that you want.
The equipment, are they flat plates that go on the roof?
That's correct.
Typically?
They're typically flat plate collectors. They're different types of solar hot water collectors. The principle of those collectors is very simple. I'm sure you've seen a garden hose. If you happen to have a black garden hose out in the sun, you turn the tap on after a couple of hours of that hose being out in the sun, you're going to get some pretty hot water coming out of that hose for a few seconds. A solar thermal collector is essentially that. It's essentially a black garden hose, even though it may not be made from rubber or plastic. It's typically made from copper or other materials like that. But you have a fluid going through that. The sunshine will heat up that fluid in those coils that are typically, again, mounted on the roof or in some sunny place on your property. And then that fluid will be circulating through a hot water tank in your basement or your utility room, preheating your hot water in your hot water tank to whatever temperature it can preheat it to.
So that fluid is probably some kind of antifreeze, so
that
it keeps moving.
That could be an antifreeze. It could also be water that's being circulated in a closed loop system. But you have to, you know, just install so that it can't freeze up in the winter, of course.
So the idea is the fluid is being heated on your roof, say, in this flat plate collector. It's circulating down to a tank which might be in your basement, and then it's heating water in that tank, which is then going to be distributed.
It'll heat up the water in your water tank. And let's say, you know, it's not that sunny a day. Maybe it'll heat it up to only 80 degrees or 90 degrees, whatever it may be. You want to take a shower and you want to have water at 100 or 110 or 120, your conventional existing heating system, whether it's a gas furnace or oil furnace or whatever it may be, it could be electric, will then boost it up to the remaining temperature differential. You know, it'll bring it up to 120 or whatever you've got it set at. But it saves a lot of energy because you're preheating it to that temperature. And in some instances, certainly in the summer with a lot of sunshine out there, the sun alone will bring up the water to the required temperature.
Again, with your black hose analogy, even though it's a cold day, maybe 25, 30 degrees, the collector will actually produce water, which is fairly hot.
That's right. In a typical scenario, let's just take a family of four. You can figure you'll need about you'll need a system that would be roughly 60 square feet in size on your roof, and you would need a storage tank that would be about 80 gallons. Those 60 or something square feet of solar collectors on your roof would preheat that water in your 80 gallon storage tank, if need be, your backup heating system, conventional heating system, will bring it up to the remaining temperature. Over the course of the year, this system will offset your conventional fuel usage by about 70%. So you'll get about 70% here in Long Island. You would get about 70% of the energy for free, courtesy of Mother Nature.
So if you had a desire to use some of this heat for your space heating, would you need to put in extra equipment?
That's right. You can heat your house with solar heat also, in addition to just, to what we just went through, generating electricity and generating hot water for your home, or your business, by the way. You can also heat your home or your business with solar technology. What I did in my case, in my home in East Hampton, was I built the house with a solar hybrid heating system. And what that means really is, it used to be called a passive solar system. It means that I constructed and designed the house so that we have a lot of south-facing glass surfaces, meaning we got a lot of our windows and sliding doors facing south. We have a very well-insulated building envelope, a very well-insulated and airtight house. And during the day when the sun shines, sunshine comes in through the windows in the wintertime, heats up the air in the house, but not only heats up the air, it also hits the floor and heats up the what we call thermal mass in the floor, where you can store the heat. It's sort of like a thermal battery. So just like a rock outside, when at the end of the day, even in the winter, when the sun was out and you sit on a rock that's been out in the sunshine all day, it'll be quite warm. So in the same way, in a home or in a business facility, when you have sunshine coming in through glass surfaces on the south side, you can store that heat in thermal mass in the form of a slab floor, tiled floor, a brick wall, and things like that. And then that thermal mass will then slowly give off the heat it collected during the day over the course of the night. The system is called a hybrid system because, again, just like with a solar hot water system, there may be days when it's just cloudy for a whole week, or for an extended period of time, and you'll have some backup heating needs, and they'll be essentially be provided by an existing conventional heating system. In my case, I have a very high efficiency boiler that brings up the house to the temperature. But again, it's preheated, and maybe the sun may not be enough to bring it up to 70 degrees when there is no sun, but it already has preheated it to, let's say, 58 degrees. 62 degrees, whatever it may be, and then my heating system will kick in and just boost it up the rest. And again, it saves 70% of the conventional energy fuel.
This sort of passive solar heating aspect, is that something that's peculiar to new construction, or can people use that in older houses?
Typically, it's done in new construction because it has a great deal to do with how you orient the building. You want to face that facade south. And also with the thermal mass, you got to make sure you have some kind of a big stone wall or slab floor where you can store the heat. There are instances where people have been doing it in renovations. When you're adding to the house and you look at the plants, there may be a way to do it on the south side or add a sunroom that brings in additional solar gain and helps heat the house.
You're getting your hot water obviously during the day. when the solar collectors are being heated. The water is stored, let's say, in your basement in a tank. What happens at night? Is that water going to get cold? Or are you then going to have to move to your backup system? How long will water stay hot?
Well, that's a good question, Ken. The water will stay in that tank, and that tank has to be well insulated. And if that is a well-insulated tank, the water will stay warm or hot for an extended period of time, certainly overnight. But you got to make sure that you have a super insulated tank that costs a little extra, but it'll save a lot in terms of fuel cost, and it'll save a lot in terms of harmful emissions. But again, that's why you need, because we cannot count on sunshine here every day, you need a small backup system that will just boost it up if you need a couple of extra degrees there.
Because as we said before, you want to stay on the electric grid for your solar electric. You want to keep your furnace and a solar thermal system.
That's right. It's just that you can get away with a much, much smaller furnace. It should also be a very high efficiency furnace or boiler, and you will use dramatically less fossil fuel. You will use dramatically less oil, heating oil, or gas, natural gas or propane.
And if you have a big enough, system that you want to use some of your heat from your thermal for space heating, you would put in pipes under your floors, and you could run the hot water through that.
Sure, there are different ways to do that, but that would be one way. You can power a building 100%. On these renewable energy resources today. We have the technologies today to make buildings either completely energy neutral or almost energy neutral. So in new construction, that is certainly possible. The buildings have been built that generate all of their own electricity on site. Now, if you get close to that and you generate 90% or 95% of your energy on site and with renewable and local, natural resources, that's a very good thing. And that's what I'm trying to do, and that's what we're trying to get other people to do, because it just makes sense. I mean, it saves money. It's good for the environment. It helps us reduce greenhouse gas emissions. It helps us tackle climate change and global warming. It just makes sense all around.
Well, for the listeners, let's see if we could work through a particular case where we will see if we could design a system using your website, Solar Calculator, and see how much money we might save and how big a system the person might need. Could we do that?
Absolutely. I'm going to go right here on the computer and go to renewableenergylongisland.org, and that's our website.
And listeners, if you go to that website, to the homepage, on the left side near the bottom, you'll see a link. It's the last link, Sunshine is Free. And if you click on that, that takes you to the solar calculator.
That's right.
And you can we'll see if we can work through an example now.
Yeah. So I'm going to go to this Long Island Shines Make Your Own Energy link that we have on our website, and Sunshine is Free. And now I'm going to be on that website, and I'm going to skip through a couple of things here. It tells us all about why solar energy is a great idea, and you see a little meter spinning backwards, and gives you a little flavor of what your electric meter is going to do when you install solar panels. But we're going to skip that for now and go straight to the second step, which says calculate savings. And I'm going to go here and say that I live in Suffolk County on Long Island. I have a home, and my annual electric usage, which you can get by calling your utility company, in our case here in Long Island, the Long Island Power Authority.
Listeners, if you just look at the bottom of your bill, I know on page one of my bill at the bottom, it says a kilowatt hour used for the month, and you can easily check.
Right. And so I'm going to put in, we're just going to assume a figure here, which is sort of an average, a little bit below average figure, of 7,200 kilowatt hours per year.
Okay, so we say that I understand the average is around 700 kilowatt hours. So let's say our family has installed some energy saving devices and gotten their usage down to 600 kilowatt hours a month.
They listened to the radio show here and they did all the good things we talked about already. And so now we have 7,200 kilowatt hours they're still using every year. And we're going to say, let's see what we can do for them. Let's see if we can get their fossil fuel consumption down, reduce their carbon emissions, and reduce their electric bill. So I'm going to put in 7,200 kilowatt hours on our calculator here on the renewableenergylongisland.org website on the Long Island Shines pages and say, get my solar information. And there it is. The computer is just a wizard, and it tells me that if we want to meet half or 50% of our family's energy consumption, electricity consumption, with solar power, with solar electric panels, we would need a solar electric system of about 2.8 kilowatt. Now, this is confusing to people because there are kilowatt hours, which is the amount of energy we use, and then there's also kilowatts, which is how we measure the size of solar electric systems. So don't confuse apples and oranges.
So 2.83 kilowatt peak power solar array on a very sunny day, right, at operating at maximum efficiency would produce 2.83 kilowatt hours in 1 hour. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's correct. There are certain line losses involved and things, but essentially
theoretically,
that's sort of the peak power it can put out. Now, that system is going to take up about 280 square feet on your roof or on your garage or an auxiliary building. It doesn't actually have to be on the roof. You could, if you have a large enough property and you have room in the yard, it could be mounted somewhere else as long as it is in the sun facing more or less south and unshaded. You'd need about 280 square feet for this size system. This system, and this is the question, Ken, I always get first from people is, okay, now tell me, how much is it going to cost me? This system would cost approximately $21,000.
So you're looking at around $7,500 a kilowatt hour, something
like that. It depends on where you live,
I misspoke, a kilowatt, rather.
You know, what contractor you're going to get your bids from, and we always tell people get at least three bids, compare them, and compare them not just on price, but compare quality, experience, and many other things, warranties, etc. But let's assume we selected a contractor who gave us an estimate, and we signed a contract now that would install this system, turnkey installation, everything included, permits and warranties and all of that good stuff included, for $21,000. That's our upfront cost before any of the utility rebates and before the federal and state tax incentives and tax credits that are available. The good news here is that the system costs a lot of money, $21,000, but there are some substantial rebates and tax credits available. Here on Long Island, the Long Island Power Authority will pay up to $37,500 to any customer who owns a home and lives at that home who installs a solar system. There's a certain formula, and that's why we have this calculator here. And the incentives in Connecticut are similar to that. So without going into a lot of formulas and details, I can tell you that this system here that we're talking about, a 2.8 kilowatt system, would yield about $15,000 in utility rebates, New York State tax credits, and federal tax credits. So you're getting a $21,000 for about $6,000.
So that's on Long Island. And if you're in Connecticut, you would probably not do quite as well because New York has a state tax credit that Connecticut does not. But Connecticut, like Long Island, has a very generous rebate program, which is administered by the Connecticut Clean Energy Fund. And you get more information about that at ctinnovations.com. So instead of, say, $6,500, maybe you're looking at something like $10,000.
And that's exactly right, Ken. And also the federal tax credit, and we and others fought long and hard for that. We finally have that now. The federal tax credit is an additional $2,000. That's available, of course, in Connecticut. They still can consider Connecticut part
sure.
of the union.
So that's reflected in the $6,500 figure and in the say that $10,000 estimate I mentioned
right.
for Connecticut. And so what would be the annual energy savings?
Well, this system, let me put it this way. This system, you know, remember we said this system would have a price tag of $21,000, and here on Long Island, the consumer, the homeowner, would end up paying about $6,000 out-of-pocket expenses after receiving the rebates and the tax credits. So
he's doing like 20 cents, around 20 cents a kilowatt hour, 600 kilowatt hours a month. His before bill would be $120 a month, I would say, or $1,440 a year. So if he cuts that in half, he's saving half of $1,440. He'd be saving $720 a year if you opted for this 50% array, right?
Right. You can make it bigger or you can make it smaller depending on what your budget and your desire to be green tells you. The way I look at this is, Ken, I look at it as an investment in our future. And I, looking at these numbers, and our calculator makes that very clear, and people can print that out for their own home, of course, and do their own numbers there with the help of the calculator. But in this case, you just installed a system that ended up costing you $6,000. It's a system that's worth about $21,000. You invested $6,000 after receiving the rebates and tax credit. How much is that system going to produce in electricity over, not even its lifetime, but let's just say over the 25 years of the warranty for the panels?
Well, you're going to pay for it, according to the numbers I see, in less than 10 years in Long Island, and maybe in something like 12, 13 years in Connecticut.
That's right.
I would say, looking at the numbers, Gordian, that the rebate and the credits are very important to encourage people to use solar electric.
Absolutely. The price of solar technology is coming down and has come down tremendously over the last couple of decades. It's still coming down slowly, but and the technology is still evolving gradually. But those rebates are also being ramped down accordingly. So this is a very good time to go solar, not only because there's a great need to reduce our dependence on fossil fuels and reduce carbon dioxide and greenhouse gas emissions. So the sooner we do it, the better. But also from an investment perspective, again, if you look at this system that we just used as an example, this system will generate about $36,000 worth of electricity over a 25-year period, and it will continue to generate electricity thereafter. And that's assuming today's electricity costs. So with very conservative assumptions, you're paying about $6,000 for a system here in Long Island, and you're going to get back at least $36,000 worth of electricity. In addition to that, of course, you're doing the right thing for the environment. So let's look at that. The greenhouse gas emissions that you're avoiding by not having a conventional power plant powering your home, in this case, are about 75 tons. This system, over 25 years, will help reduce emissions of carbon dioxide by 75 tons. So what does that mean? What's 75 tons of carbon dioxide? That's the equivalent of about 150,000 miles not driven in a typical car. So I would argue that this is not only the right thing to do for your pocketbook, this is the right thing to do for our planet.
And I understand that the solar thermal system is even more cost-effective than the solar electric system per dollar invested.
Yeah, solar thermal systems are so cost-effective and make so much sense from a purely, you know, financial perspective without even looking at the environmental benefits that in many cases there aren't even utility rebates available because it just is a no-brainer. Let's take the example we had earlier about our solar hot water system, where we said we're going to need about 60 square feet of area on the roof, about an 80-gallon storage tank in the basement or wherever it would go. That system would cost somewhere in the $8,000 to $9,000 range here on Long Island, installed, everything included. There are no utility rebates on this, but there are tax credits also, a federal and a state tax credit. After the federal and state tax credit, the homeowner here in Long Island would pay about $4,750 for this system. You know, so it's almost.
And even in Connecticut, you'd still benefit from the federal state tax, a federal tax credit.
Absolutely. And we ran the numbers here. That system will pay back for itself in about 7 years. And again, that's at today's energy prices. And I can't predict the future, but I have a feeling that over time, energy costs, energy prices are going to go up rather than down.
Sure. So the payback will be a shorter period.
The payback will probably be even shorter. But if you, with this system, you'd be doing the right thing for the environment. You're using renewable, clean, emission-free and local energy, and you're getting your money back in 7 years and probably a little less than that. And then after that, that system is going to produce free energy, free hot water for you for a long, long time.
Gordian, what are your goals for the solar growth in Long Island?
Well, we, a few years back, starting in 1999 and 2000, I think we had just two or three, less than a handful of solar electric systems connected here on Long Island. And I'm very happy to report that last year we reached the 800 mark. There are now over 800 solar electric systems connected to the grid here on Long Island, generating clean, emission-free electricity. And our goal here at RELI is to make the 1,000 mark or break the 1,000 barrier this year in 2007. I think we're going to make it.
Are there any policy changes that you would suggest, particularly at the federal level, to encourage solar or other renewable energy?
Absolutely, Ken. I mean, we, as a nation, subsidize fossil fuels, coal, oil, natural gas, in various forms to the tune of billions of dollars. And I think that's a terrible thing. I think we need to support clean, domestic, renewable energy sources. Take those subsidies we're giving to big oil and big coal and put it in, invested in R&D and invested in deployment for solar energy, for wind energy, for fuel cells, for biomass, for all the things that we need to do in order to kick this addiction to fossil fuels and in order to break the stranglehold that OPEC and other oil and gas producing countries have on us.
Thank you very much, Gordian, for that very informative talk. We've been speaking with Gordian Rocky, Executive Director of Renewable Energy, Long Island.org. Thanks a lot, Gordian.